This is Money Every Month with Robin Roberts of Pikes Peak National Bank and Tim Lee of Hoff and Lee. Robin and Tim will help you find and fund assets to build personal wealth. Now, here's Robin and Tim.
This is episode 7 of Money Every Month. This is a show where we help you find and fund assets to build personal wealth. I'm Robin Roberts with Pikes Peak National Bank, here with my co-host Tim Lee with Hoff and Lee Commercial Real Estate. And today we're going to talk about a market report that Tim puts out, what is it, about like once a week?
Every 2 weeks.
He's been doing this for...
a long time.
Years.
Yeah,
years. I've been getting it for years.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about kind of his structure of the market report, how you can sign up to receive it on your email every couple of weeks, and then specifically what he talked about in one of his most recent, our favorite topic lately, inflation.
Yeah, we're really concerned about that, aren't we?
Yes, well, we are.
So how does the bank look at inflation? What's the strategy? Because you guys are like at ground central. I've been, as you know, because we've talked about my personal situation, wrestling desperately with kind of my core conviction has always been with respect to commercial real estate. As you buy it, you pay it down, you pay it off, you know, debt free. But the problem is now that interest rates are so low, and that, you know, having stuff debt free, while it's you know, it's a great principle and it's a great strategy, it's probably bad finance, because you can borrow money so cheaply. Then I keep going back, well, I can get that money for so cheap of an interest rate. But then I catch myself say, yes, but you still have to pay the money back. And so how do you look at that from a lending perspective?
Well, I mean, from the lending perspective, we're looking at where are rates going? So where do rates go in an inflationary period? And where do interest rates go? I mean, they go up,
right? And so talk to, you know, I mean, I think, you know, you mentioned my market report, and thank you, by the way. And if anybody wants to sign up for the market report, you can go to, just shoot an email to tim@timlee.com or tim@hofflee.com, and I'll add your name to the readers list. There's probably about 5,000 people on that list now. So I've actually been told I have a greater readership audience than the Colorado Springs Business Journal or the Independent. It might even be bigger than the paper delivery of the Gazette, for all I know. You know, you never know. But anyway, it's very specifically driven to folks who are interested in you know, social issues and local politics and real estate and investing and there's actually another column on my market report. I have a new columnist actually who joined like 3 weeks ago, and everybody loves this columnist. It's my black
dog. She's super cute.
Yeah, I know. So yeah. My dog writes a column every month or every 2 weeks rather. But at any rate, I digress. Story of my life, right? I sometimes I'm like Brooke the dog who wants to go fetch a stick, a ball, or you know a fish. Who knows? You know, she's always chasing something weird, and so you have to reel me back in because sometimes I digress like she does. At any rate, the topic du jour on the market report really this week dealt with what the Fed is doing, and because one of the things we like to talk about and everything we do is oriented toward helping folks get more money every month. And when you look at what the Fed's doing, the Federal Reserve System's doing, they're pumping money into the system like nobody has ever seen, ever. And one of the reference points I made was a statistic that I got on the internet from somebody I consider a fairly credible source that, in fact, it's hard to believe. So you got to listen carefully to when I say this, that 30% of all the money that has ever been created in the United States, okay, 1/3 of all the money that has ever been created in the entire country was created in the last 12 months. I mean, that is a ridiculous statement. Yet they say that that's the case. And, you know, it's pretty easy to verify and check out. So my point was, whether that's the true statement or not, there's been this tremendous influx of cash into the system. And so if you can kind of think about, easy way to think about it is if the coronavirus had a negative impact on the U.S. economy, let's say $800 billion, which is, I think, what they say. What the Fed and the Treasury have done is to fill that negative part of the balance sheet, or just to fill in that hole. If you think just in terms of a hole, you have a hole in the ground that's $800 billion, and they came along and they filled it up with $4 trillion. And so not only did they fill the hole, but then it's overflowing. And so you have money blowing around on the ground, and that's literally what's going on. There's so much cash floating around, and people are receiving so much cash. I mean, what's really interesting in the economy where people work, they've actually nationally have experienced, I want to say, I forget what it is, but it's like maybe an 8% or something like that rise in personal income during COVID. I mean, how does that work? During COVID, people's incomes went up. Okay, I can tell you how it works is stimmy checks. Everybody got a stimmy check, and so that went right to their income. Or the other way they do it is through the unemployment. There's so many people, as you know, making more money collecting unemployment than they were working. And in fact, that's created a real problem in the system, because people collecting unemployment, I think, is due to run out in September, but people collecting that, they say, hey, I make more money sitting on my butt. Why would I go work?
Well, and that reduces the amount of people in the labor force that are actually willing to get off of unemployment and go to work. So businesses need employees. There's less of them to go around because they're competing with unemployment. I know it's unpopular to say that, but it's just the truth. I mean, businesses are competing with unemployment. And then the comment back from most is, well, businesses should just raise their wages. Well, actually, businesses are raising their wages because the supply of workers is less than the demand for workers.
So wages, you have to pay more.
So wages are going up. What is a key indicator of inflation coming? Wages start going up, and they are with government interference, of course, with minimum wage laws, which are happening in many states and certainly are happening in Colorado where we are recording this, but government interference in the unemployment system as well. So businesses are competing with unemployment benefits. They're quite attractive right now. They go through September. We're recording this in April of 2021. So what happens over the summer? Well, wages continue to go up, yeah. Businesses need people, and I would say from an anecdotal perspective that consumers no longer have the patience, the COVID patience. Like businesses were able to say, hey, we've got a COVID outbreak, so we have less, it's going to take longer for you to get whatever product or service.
I think
consumers have lost that patience.
They have. Yeah. I'll tell you what, yeah, I think that we're at some kind of an inflection point that I really try and study this stuff a lot and try and understand what's going on so you can like predict the future, because as you know, we do a lot of advisement for our commercial real estate clients, and you know, people just really, you know, people are typically desperate for a father to tell them what to do, because people don't want to be responsible for themselves, and they want someone to tell them that whatever decision they're making, it's okay, you're okay. And so I try and learn as much of this stuff as I can to try and be a steady voice out there. And, you know, one of my number one things is I tell everybody is do not live in fear. You know, just live fearlessly. Just go out and do everything. Like everything's going to be fine. But that's the number one. I mean, that's biblical. It's in every religion, you know, I mean, that's the number one probably sin is to live in fear, because you don't get to maximize your opportunity. But when you look at all the stuff that's going on, it's kind of hard not be like scared shitless. Can I say that on the radio? Because it's scary out there. And, you know, I mean, I was reading something this morning and said in India, for example, the State Department put the highest alert out on India and said, look, if you're an American citizen, get on a plane and get your butt out of there like right now. Get the next flight. Don't wait till tomorrow. Next flight out. And they even said there's like 15 airlines that are available, so get out. And so I remember the last time I heard that was when Wuhan was going on. And I thought, you know, that can't be good. And that's going to impact us somewhere. And I actually thought about going to Costco at the time and buying toilet paper. And I went over and I bought like one of those, like a 12 pack. And I remember thinking like I was a dumbbell, because it's like, you know, I'm not a prepper, but you know, it's like, you got to be kind of cognizant of what was going on. And then like 2 weeks later, you couldn't get toilet paper. Right. So it was one of those things I saw, and I should have taken greater action, but I didn't. And now you look at India and like what's going on there, and you say, okay, how's that going to impact us? How's that going to impact our topic, which is inflation or commercial real estate or investing locally? And how does that impact our money every month? Bringing it back to what we always talk about. And so these things all interplay and work together. And so those are the kind of the, that's the highway and the lane we're trying to navigate to stay on to, you know, to continue to go down that road toward money every month. But, you know, you look at what the government has done in terms of stimulus and unemployment and all those things. You know, again, anecdotally, I have a friend who's got a contracting company. And, you know, rough numbers, he said, 2 weeks ago he told me this. He said, we had a call for, we're looking for labor. Just labor ores for their construction company. They had something like 50 people apply. And the questions were, do you have a reliable way to get to work? That's important. Can you pass a drug test? If you could get past those two, then you could get on. And so they had like 50 people reply. And, you know, most of them didn't show up because all they have to do is apply so they continue to get their unemployment. So it's a ruse. So number one, they're playing the system. But the few who showed up, well, can you pass a drug test? Well, yeah, I can pass a drug test. I mean, I smoke a little weed, but does that matter? And it's like, yeah, you can't smoke weed and work on like a government contract that we get to, you know, give you a job, right? And so it's like people are so unaware, you know, yeah, I can pass a drug test because weed's not a drug, right? It's just weed. And I have a friend who runs a car dealership. They've got an opening for a parts guy. It's a $50,000 a year job. Okay. He can't get anybody to apply. I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. And this is like, these are like real stories. This isn't like makeup. This is like real stuff.
No, we live in this world every day. Yeah. I know that it's true.
We know a bank that couldn't open up their lobby for months because they couldn't get enough employees to open up the bank lobby.
Yep.
You know?
Well, and businesses are dealing with the shortage of available employees. And the government's requirements on COVID are still in place on businesses, which people don't understand. They think, oh, well, people are getting vaccinated and we've hit some tipping point that, you know, the current administration is aiming for. But the public health in the counties have not changed what businesses have to do as far as COVID goes to protect their employees. And so they still have to follow that. So this lack of patience on consumers' part, they don't understand that businesses are still operating with COVID restrictions just like they were this time last year. It's the exact same.
Yeah, and, see, no, and so here's what happens, because you get a scofflaw like I am, right? And so I came to the studio this morning and I didn't have a mask. And so I grabbed one out of the back seat because I, you know, I went out and I bought like one of those little boxes where you have those blue hospital masks in there, and they're probably worth about, you know, a dollar. And I paid $29 for the stupid box in the height of COVID, right? So I got totally, you know, price screwing on that thing. And so, but I got my little mask and I put it in my back pocket. And I thought, you know, it's like I'm going to walk from the parking lot, come in the building, get the elevator ride up. And I didn't wear my mask. And some guy wanted to get on the elevator and he totally mask shamed me. You could just tell. He had a mask on, but you could tell a scowl on his face. But even though I couldn't see it, I could feel it. And I'm thinking, you know what? I'm not wearing a mask because I've had the shots. I mean, I'm like...
Well, you're fully vaccinated.
I am, so. You know, but it's just more principle than anything else. And when I got vaccinated, I just felt dirty anyway. It's like, oh,
you know, I
gave into the man. But at any rate, so you had all this supply chain disruption and, you know, lack of ability to get materials and stuff. And so we've seen, so not only have you seen inflation with salaries and wages, although I would guarantee you that the person at the bottom of that totem pole hasn't felt those wage increases as much as other people that are further up the food chain. So, you know, but then we've seen it in, you know, as you know, I'm adding a garage onto my house. And when we started out, I paid $32 for a 4x8 sheet of plywood. And last Friday, which would have been, I don't know what the date would have been, but you know, somewhere around the 20th of April, 2021, it was $97 for a sheet of plywood. And that's in like less than 3 months. And so that's, if that's not inflation, I don't know what you would call that, you know, gouging maybe or whatever. But so anyway, there's so much money flowing into the system. That all these things are causing all these dislocations and all that kind of stuff. And what my market report's theme was this last issue basically talked about, you know, the problem that the Fed has, you know, gotten the country into, which is this huge debt, and how they could, what would be the plan to get out of there? Because at some point, you can't just keep printing money or you end up with like Zimbabwe's dollars that are denominated in trillion-dollar bills.
Well, I want to go back for a minute before you go into these six items about supply chain. I mean, let's talk about microchips and how those are. I mean, those are affecting not just like you would think, oh, well, computers. Well, the computers in your vehicles.
Right.
So I mean, there are whole factories shut down in the United States that make new vehicles because they can't get these chips. So if you're wanting to buy a new vehicle in the next 9 months, you're probably not going to have a lot of choice in the matter. So what does that do? You can't buy a new vehicle because there's no supply of those. So what increases? The used vehicles.
And then, our good friend from Norwest Auto, Jennifer Payne, was telling us the other day that she has never seen used vehicle prices increase the way they've increased in the last 60 days.
And they will continue to do so. For someone, for a family who is buying a vehicle and can't buy a new vehicle, has to buy a used vehicle, has to pay higher prices because of it, that is inflation.
Well, and then so it's insidious, even worse than that, because not only can you not get the chip, can't get a chip to go in the car to buy the car, then since they can't get the chip, they don't have to come to work. So those guys get to stay home. Who knows if they're going to get unemployment or if they're just going to get benefits or just get to sit at home until the chips start arriving. So, you know, again, here's a sidebar segue for everybody, because we talk about money every month and a good investment. So what? How about this? Some of this stuff is so obvious that you don't even have to be that smart to figure it out. Because, like, you know, really, I'm from North Dakota and dumb a Norwegian. But even I can figure something like this out, okay? If there's a shortage of chips in every aspect, including, by the way, if you want to buy a hot tub, that hot tub is run on a microchip now. So forget about buying a hot tub, because that's 2 years. They're 2 years out to get a hot tub. You go down on Sinton Road and order a hot tub, the guy said 2 years.
Are appliances the same weight? Are they
every if you little? If it requires a chip?
Wow.
So here's an investment idea. Go on the internet, Yahoo Finance or one of those places, and figure out what companies manufacture microchips. And buy some shares in that company, because you know if they're making microchips. And here's even a better idea: go buy Apple stock, because Apple just came out with a new chip that's better than the Intel chip, and they're saying that it's like twice as powerful and twice as, you know, less heat production, less costly. And so again, Apple's going to take over the chip industry. If you want to buy make some money in the stock market, look where they make those chips, because they need them. There's not enough, and I guarantee you, within 6 months, the government's going to have a giveaway program to get microchip production going in the United States. But here's the kind of, I always think it's funny, by the time they figure that out, the private market will have figured
we'll have
it
already
out
figured
and
it
they'll
out,
just be giving away
problem.
Free money.
Yes.
But buy microchips. But yeah, so all that stuff goes up.
Yeah. And we listen to the Fed chair say, well, we want to keep inflation at 2%. Well, now he's come out and said, well, 3 or 4% is okay. But
I didn't hear that. Did he come out?
He came out and said that, I think this was the last time he spoke, he said that they were going to raise it up to 3 to 4% was their target.
Well, you know why they want to keep the stated number low is because all the indexes that, you know, Medicare, Social Security, government pay, all those things are indexed off the consumer price index, which is how they, you know, the basic way to think about inflation. So if it's 2%, all those COLA increases, cost of living adjustment increases, is 2%. If it's 8%, it's at 8%. Well, the government doesn't want to pay at that rate.
Right.
So as a policy matter, you can understand why they might, let's say, speak like Pinocchio. And, you know, of course, it's kind of interesting. You always watch Jerome Powell whenever he's given a talk, and you just see his nose grow, like right before your very eye, just like, you know, Pinocchio.
Well, but I mean, that number, that 2%, 3%, 4% really is what you experience. It's not that number. It's what you experience when you're buying a 2x4 and it's $9 instead of $3.
Or gas in your car.
Gas in your car. The average person is experiencing higher than 3 or 4% inflation every day right now
and
in
here,
what they're purchasing.
Here's the insidious thing about it, and people don't think. This is like a, I think, really interesting to think about. So there's this thing called the Cantillon effect. And the Cantillon effect is, it was an idea put out by an economist in the late 1600s. And it, long story short, it's basically the guys who are closest to the money derive the greatest benefit from it, because not only are they insiders and know what's going on, but they're closest to the money, so they receive the money. And so in our world, if you were a large bank like, you know, Goldman Sachs or, you know, Chase or one of those guys, you know, they're close to the Treasury and to the Fed. And so when they give away all those trillions of dollars, that money's going to naturally attrite right to those guys, right? And so the little guy, you know, going to get a little bone, you're going to get a stimmy check, right? And that's going to dribble all the way down. And so some guy sitting in one of my apartments down on Nevada Avenue gets a $1,400 check. He thinks he's hit the lottery. Well, by the time he gets that check, everything that he's going to go buy is increased in cost.
Right.
And so he's not getting the same benefit. In fact, the guy, according to the Cantillon effect, the guy at the front who got the money like a month ago, literally is buying stuff at a discount compared to the guy who got his money this month who's paying at a higher rate. So not only is he not getting the benefit of the money that, you know, that we're supposed to be giving to, you know, fill that gap, he buys stuff at a higher cost, so the money that he does get goes less far.
Well, and I'm just going to point out these higher wages. The higher wages are paid for by the customer, by the consumer.
Right.
They are not, I mean, the business absorbs very little of that. Just the price of products and services goes up because wages
except the price of lending goes down because you want to keep trying to put money out there. So your interest rates have been going down.
But ultimately, they can't stay where they are as the cost of everything continues to go up. So
right.
Ultimately, the interest rates are going to have to go up.
And the average person probably doesn't think about inflation the way that, that we might talk about it, which is this insidious tax.
Yes.
And so inflation, as the price of things go up, and if you're fixed at an income, that's like having an extra tax every month. I mean, you're just paying more money for everything, so it's less money you have to spend on to spread that money around. So it is an insidious tax. So it's a horrible thing. It erodes the value of everything that you own. And
so in your market report, you talked about six ways that the Fed can get us out of this or change what we're, the trajectory we're going.
Six ways to look at the economy, what potentially could happen in the economy. I couched it like to get out of this, let's say, overstimulation or excess printing and that kind of stuff. But, you know, what's the exit strategy? Because eventually we keep doing what we're doing, something is going to happen. You know, so you try and say, okay, what's the likely thing that's going to happen? And there's people on the web that predict, you know, dire consequences and all this stuff, and it's going to be the end of the world and all that stuff. And none of that's anything that I believe. And, you know, again, because it goes contrary to my core belief, which is to live without fear. So you wouldn't want to run around, but you don't have to be afraid if you have knowledge. And so that's what we try and do on this program, is to give knowledge to people so they can make good decisions based on, you know, information that they might not normally get in other places. But there are six things, and then we'll talk about them quickly, and then we'll go in detail if you want to. But so options. So there are six options. One of them is the government could default. They could raise taxes. They could have a yard sale, which sounds kind of weird, but they could have a yard sale. I like this next one. They could steal. And, you know, that's what they're really good at that anyway, but they could steal. There could be a great technological innovation, which is kind of, you know, I kind of have deep feelings about that, especially with respect to the green economy and all that kind of stuff. And so that might be a pathway. Then the last idea is inflation. So we talk about those are different things that could happen in the future based on what's happening right now. And this is like not made up, you know, monkey business stuff. This is like legitimate. These are like legitimate ideas of things that could potentially happen based on what we see going on in the economy right now. So, and jump in anytime, but default. Okay. So number one, could the government just default? They could default, but, you know, they promised to give free stuff to everybody. Free stuff's like Medicare, Obamacare, Social Security, cops, firefighters, ambulance service, free school, free lunch, free money, all those things that you think about. They could just say, you know what, we're not going to do that anymore. They're not going to do that. I mean, politically, I mean, if a politician recommended that, he would become what I love to say, he'd be sad and lonely, right? Mm-hmm. They'd kick his butt out of office. And so is the government going to default? No. So the question is how much money can they print before people have no confidence in the money? That's a bigger concern, but the government's not going to default. And in America, the U.S., we have the sovereign, you know, dollar. So that's the currency unit that international trades
currency.
Are settled.
Yeah, we're the reserve currency.
So we're not going to default. So forget about that.
We
one.
Could lose reserve currency status.
We could,
however.
And China's trying to get it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole other conversation.
Yes.
Could they raise taxes? Absolutely.
Will they raise taxes?
Will they raise taxes?
Yes.
Yes, they will. However, okay, if you think about it this way, and they're going to raise taxes, they're going to raise them a lot, but they cannot raise taxes enough to solve the problem. So if the U.S. gross domestic product, which is the value of all goods and services produced in the country, is $20 trillion, which is, that's kind of the number that it is on an annual basis, the unfunded mandates, which is the stuff that we have committed to as a country, but we don't have the money to pay for, they say it's like $60 trillion, but there are people out there really saying it's closer to $220 trillion. So we have a productive capacity of 20, but we have a debt obligation of 220. So you can't raise enough taxes to pay that. That's just not possible. See, if you took all the billionaires' money, it's just like a dimple. It's nothing. Okay, so raise taxes, yeah, but it's not, you know, but that's just going to do it. But that's not going to solve the problem. They could have a yard sale. And people always say, yard sale? What are you, Lee, what are you talking about? Well, you know, we bought the Louisiana Purchase, which was like 827,000 square miles, which is like, that's like big. It's the whole, it's like the Mississippi River Basin, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty good land. And we bought Alaska. And think about this. We only paid, can you imagine this? If you would tell me if you would loan money on this deal. Hey, Robin, I found this state. I can get it for $7.2 million. I mean, would you do that deal? I mean, probably no money down, right? So we paid $7.2 million for Alaska. How about this? Let's go back and sell Louisiana Purchase back to France because they wanted it, right? And or sell Alaska back to the Russians. Both cases, they would probably say, yeah, we'll buy that, right? But that's not going to happen either, but it's kind of fun to think about. I thought what would be really interesting to have the commission on the sale of the Louisiana Purchase back to France because my idea, I should get paid for it. but they're not going to do that.
And then they'll tax you.
Right, and they'll tax you. Exactly, at a capital gain rate that they're changing, so it'd be like at a personal rate.
Yes.
Could the government steal their way out of our financial mess? Sure. I mean, we have a strong military. They just go to the, you know, go to the Ukraine like Russia or, you know, go to, you know, steal Hong Kong or whatever. Just send in the troops, take it over. Go to some place where there's like really good, you know, assets like gold and copper and, you know, all that kind of uranium and steel. We could do that. We have the military wherewithal. But again, we're not going to do that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Tim likes to put links to songs in his market report, and when he's talking about stealing, he put a link to a song in there. Tell us what that is.
Oh, it's a link to the song that Bobby Bear sang back in the day. It's called "The Winner," and you should all listen to it because it's pretty funny. It's about the guy that went into a bar, and he got in a fight with the guy who's the bar guy, and they fought and fought and fought and fought, and the one guy got a broken arm and a bloody nose and a black eye, and he was the winner. So it's a pretty good song, but go to the market report and listen to that song.
Okay, go to 5 and 6.
Okay, technological innovation is a great way to solve most of the world's problems, and that's what happened in the 1990s with the internet, and then, the pre-internet, and then we got with, you know, cell phones and cell technology and all that kind of stuff. So we've seen this tremendous innovation, but this innovation really hasn't increased our productive capacity in terms of like on the ground level. It's allowed us to communicate more quickly, do a lot of stuff, and it's been great. But in terms of the overall productive capacity of America, innovation actually in some cases can be bad because it dislocates employees. So all of a sudden you can go to McDonald's and you call up at Advance and you call somebody who's maybe literally in India, takes your order, and on a computer it shoots it back, and when you drive through, you don't need anybody, right? So that's innovation is forced disruption in a lot of parts of the economy. But if you have good innovation and you can, you know, the green kind of New Deal idea where you switch from, you know, fossil fuels, which I think is funny because I don't believe that it's fossil oriented, but, you know, fossil fuels to, you know, solar or whatever, that technology changes the entire infrastructure of the economy. And so that can pull you out with this renaissance, if you will, and a whole new way to do business. So technological innovation might be something, and it might be something that part and parcel with what the government's very best business plan to solve this is inflation. And so if you think about it, inflation is like the only really valuable or viable option that the government has in order to redeem itself from spending all this money. And so if you want to, you know, stay ahead of the power curve and you want to, you know, not die but thrive in the future, easiest business advice is find what the government's doing and align yourself with that thinking and plan accordingly. And so if you can predict that there's going to be an inflation in the economy, which is pretty easy to predict, because think about this, if we owe China $1 trillion and we inflate our system 10%, in effect, we'll have wiped out 10% of the debt we owe to China. I mean, I go into great detail, but that's long story short. So if you're young, a simple strategy is to become a member of the investor class as soon as you can. Acquire as much fixed rate debt secured by quality assets as you can, and realize that while inflation is the insidious hidden tax that erodes your purchasing power, as it does, it correspondingly erodes the value of that debt. So you can take advantage of inflation if you know what you're doing.
I would say subscribe to Tim's market report, tim@timlee.com. That's L-E-I-G-H, tim@timlee.com. And that's it for episode 7. Thank you for listening.
This has been Money Every Month with Robin Roberts and Tim Lee. Join us weekly for more invaluable insight into the world of commercial real estate. And be sure to listen to the companion podcast on Podbean,